There's a story of a well-known speaker who, after giving an address, asked for questions. And a young man stood up and he said, completely off topic, "You know, the only reason I'm here is because I want to know God's direction for my life. How do I find God's direction for my life?" That to me is the only question that really needs to be asked. And I know that I'm surrounded by hundreds of other young people here who feel the same way. Needless to say, the speaker had not prepared for that particular question. But I believe that this is the compelling issue that many of us have gone through or will go through. How do I find God's direction for my life? How do I make the ultimate decision for my future? But then, after those decisions have been made, after you've become mature, perhaps even after you've retired or are looking forward to retirement, we are confronted by the consequences of a lifetime of decisions. The consequences of our decisions come back to us. That usually means regrets, by the way. Not always, but often. And at that point in our life, we can become complacent about the direction. We can become complacent feeling like all the great decisions have already been made. Because in particular, we cease to make decisions. In fact, we become complacent because instead of making decisions, we are simply trying to please all the people around us, or trying to simply placate the people around us, or manage the people around us, instead of actually taking hold of our life. And between these two stages and these two situations, we have to cease worrying about maintaining the status quo when we get older and realize we're the same person who was asking that question at the beginning. Lord, what is the direction for my life now? And not, what does everybody around me want? And yes, we are sometimes overcoming, as me and Benjamin said this morning, we are overcoming fear. By the way, in that regard, our indecision is just as much a decision. Because we're no longer on the leading edge of our own lives. Sometimes this is the next question. Can I take hold of my life again? We begin saying, can I make the right decisions? And at another time, can I take hold of my life again? And by the way, that means letting go of all the consequences of the other decisions we've made and press on with God. Press on with God, leaving behind those things which God has forgiven and dealt with, and press on, no matter where we are. You know, we're always stirred when we read the great biographies. I don't know how many of you love to read great biographies. I do. I remember so often, I've told you this, I studied the life of Lincoln as sometimes annually. I'll pick up a new book or something new to read, and or pick up an old one and study it again. And I remember so well that point where he has to make a decision after the fall of Fort Sumter, when it's attacked by the Confederacy. Will he raise an army and defend the Union? And I remember equally the words of Churchill after the fall of Dunkirk, when the rest of England was absolutely paralyzed with fear. And Churchill went on the radio and said, "We will never surrender." We are thrilled when we read those words. The time came and I had a decision to make. We're thrilled when we read those about great people. But the truth is, God is thrilled when we are ready to truly make a decision and make it in Him, to truly make a godly decision in Him. God is waiting on us for that. And I know that our lives can seem small in comparison. Our decisions can seem unimportant. But the impact of decisions well made not only results in our conforming to God's purpose, but it overflows blessing to other people around us. That is the reason for wanting to make decisions that are meaningful before God. And so this morning, we're going to talk about and learn about the issue of decisions, whatever stage we're in. And by the way, I'm going to begin by telling you, this is not how to make decisions for God. I know I have wonderful, brilliant colleagues, and they would have presented 10 points, 5 points, the 6 essential points, the 4 necessary points to make a right decision in God. I'm not going to do that. In fact, I confess, I don't have the slightest idea how you personally can make the right decision for God, because I'm not you. I'm not you. And personally, I would personally fear that if I were even to try to do so, the very gates of heaven would open and the crowds of saints would lean over to laugh heartily should I do so. Saying, "And he is trying to teach them how to make a right decision." Okay. Lest that happen. But I think we can learn from scriptures. We need to begin by learning from the scriptures. We're going to talk about Jehoshaphat this morning. Jehoshaphat means God judges. It's an amazing, and this is an amazing set of chapters that we're going to be reading, because Jehoshaphat's story is one of my favorites in Scripture. And for many of you who study the Scriptures, I think there's a tremendous love for this man's story. He was one of the great kings of Judah. You remember in this time, Judah and Israel were separated. The southern portion of Israel had divided from the northern nations, which were called Israel, the great 10 tribes. And it was Jehoshaphat who had inherited the mantle of David in that sense. And he was determined actually to serve the Lord as his father, Asa, had also done. But Jehoshaphat was one of the most gifted, appears to have been one of the most gifted men in Scripture. He was a tremendously gifted man. And in his time, I believe, and this is the point, this is what this is about, he set a bar, a standard of righteousness in Judah, which I think was one of the high points of the nation. And one of the things that we're going to look at is how this happened and how he did it, why it happened, how he did it, and the consequences of that as well. Now, the wonderful thing about Jehoshaphat is you read in chapter 18, in the very first verses, that he had wealth and honor in abundance. He was a man who was blessed and truly was in a position to receive blessing from God. And then he made a mistake. Chapter 18 actually leads us into his first great error. He's aligning himself in a natural way. He really wants to bring the whole of Israel together. And so he aligns himself with King Ahab of Samaria into a marriage. And of course he has numerous wives. So this is another marriage. And this is another way of trying to bring the country together. And while he's with Ahab, who is, of course, one of the most evil kings, convinces him to go to war with him. Now, I want to tell you something. This is one of the ways we often shield ourselves from taking responsibility for decisions. Somebody wanted me to do something. It seemed like they were capable. And the first thing they did was they suggested we do something together. And then next thing you know, you're in a whole passel of trouble. And here's Ahab. He tells Jehoshaphat, hey, let's go up to Ramon Gilead. We'll make war on some enemies. And so, go with me to Ramoth Gilead, he answered him, So, fine, yes. Ahab seems to Jehoshaphat to be quite capable. He is a capable, older king. And then, just before they do that, Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, you notice that in verse 4. Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, first, we should seek the word of Adonai. So, he says, before we do it, let's seek God's counsel. This becomes a whole issue that I can't go into, but the bottom line is, Ahab is warned. If you go into this battle, you will die. And Ahab's response to the prophet who gives him this warning is that he has him imprisoned, put on bread and water until he comes back from the battle. Then he and Jehoshaphat go out to the battle anyway. And Ahab again gives Jehoshaphat advice. He says, I have a great idea. We're going out against these enemies, and they're going to be coming after me. They'll know who I am. They'll be coming after me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go into the battle incognito. Nobody's going to recognize me. I'm going to be dressed like the average soldier. But we're going to dress you up like the king. How's that sound? This is what your friends do for you when they're making your decisions for you. And they are leading you into battle. And Jehoshaphat, being the younger, says, oh yeah, sure, let's do it. That's what they did. They go into battle. And before you know it, things are going badly. For a moment, Jehoshaphat is surrounded by people who, of course, think he's the king. And then he does something that his father had been failing to do. You know, as his father had gotten older, his father had been not leaning on God, not crying out to God at moments of need. But at that very moment, Jehoshaphat cries out to God for help. God helps him. Ahab isn't so lucky. So fortunate. In fact, this is what's curious about the whole incident, is that Ahab just happens to get a stray arrow which pierces right between the sections of his armor. He gets wounded. He's dead by the end of the day, just as the prophet had said. And there, at the beginning of chapter 19, is what happens when Jehoshaphat, exhausted, pulls his chariot into Jerusalem. Exhausted, barely knowing how he survived. Listen to what the prophet says to him when he arrives. It's not, by the way, "We're so glad you made it." No, no. Listen to what the prophet says. "Yehu, the son of Hanani, the seer, went out to meet him when he arrived, when he returned home to Yerushalayim in peace, b'shalom. Should you help the wicked and befriend those who hate Adonai? Because of this, Adonai's anger is upon you. Still, there is some good in you, in that you have removed the sacred places from the land and have set your heart on seeking God." You know, take a good look at this. This is the advice of a wise man to a young man who thinks he knows it all. He's a young man who has every reason to be confident. He knows it all. He's got it all together. But right in the fire of battle, he has to see, he's confronted by his true nature, his true vulnerability. "Well, there's some good in you," is what he's told. And that is where most of us are. To be honest, that is where most, there's some good in us. And how will we go on from here? You know, just as the psalmist says, how will a young man proceed along a good path? How will we take what is some good and make it truly godly? That is a tested question, and the right question. And so, Jehoshaphat changes. I think basically the wind was taken out of his sails and he turned back to God in a way that he had never imagined. Look at his response. Verse 4, "So Jehoshaphat lived in Yerushalayim and again circulated among the people from Beersheba to the hills of Ephraim, bringing them back to Adonai, the God of their ancestors." Suddenly, it strikes him, "I could have perished. I could be where Ahab is today." This is a time for Israel to turn back while you can.